Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
MMA. What's this stand for? AK, what's it stand for?
Oh, mixed martial arts. Oh, no. Oh, I'm just like, Start again. Write it back.
Oh, Bear with us. We'll be back after these words. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to the UFC 267 post-fight show. For the love of God, it has been a day. And gentlemen, we got AK. We got Casey here. AK, let me start with you. You are the Prince of Positivity. We are going to begin on to the next one tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Talking about Glover Teixeira, the brand new light heavyweight champion of the world. He goes out there, wins the first round against Jan Blachowicz. He's winning the second round, hurts Blachowicz, gets it back to the ground, submits him in round two, and the 42-year-old, or the recently turned 42-year-old from New England, is a world champion. Isn't MMA the best, AK? Isn't MMA the best?
I mean, we were saying this last year when, you know, Jan won the world title. We were like, man, I can't believe, I guess it was 37-year-old Jan Blachowicz is a UFC champion. And now it's, man, I can't believe 42-year-old Glover Teixeira is a UFC champion. So, yeah, it is amazing. And it feels deserved. I know a lot of people are kind of, not a lot of people, I should say, our own Jed Meshew kind of had this take that was like, oh, man, isn't it going to look weird if Glover wins and a 42-year-old guy is sitting at the top of the light heavyweight division? Who cares? Who cares about his age? He's right now has a claim to be the best light heavyweight in the world. I'm sure it will be disputed, just as Jan's was, especially early on when John Jones was still in the picture. I don't think he's maybe not as much of a factor anymore. But given that, you know, the top seven or eight of light heavyweight is actually pretty lively again, you are going to have people who will say, yeah, but how long is he going to hold on to it? And is he just going to be one and done? And you know what? I think for today, we can say it doesn't matter. It happened. He's in the books forever. I don't believe in the whole, oh, you have to defend it or you're a paper champion. Once you win that belt, you are officially a UFC champion all through history. Again, context, and not all champions are created equal, but he's in there. He's in the books. And it is a very, very lovely thing to see.
What do you think, Casey? I mean, you're a guy that's getting ready to make his amateur MMA debut. You're working hard. You're waking up early, mm-hmm. pedal to the metal, getting ready to step in that cage in a couple of months and to see what Glover Teixeira has done on the 5-5 after 10 fights. He got absolutely deaded by Carl Roberson at the Barclay Center 2 years ago in 2019. Mm-hmm. The man has come back. And now he's a world champion. This is unbelievable.
It's great. I see nothing negative about this at all. This is it just shows you, man. Like, this is just hard work. Keep doing it. Keep winning. He saw Glover. Glover's like, this sucks. Like, training, waking up every morning, your body's breaking down. You just gotta, your whole life is just dedicated to this. And he did it the right way, I guess. He didn't have to trash talk. He didn't have to, I don't know, get out of his... He didn't have to not be himself. He was always Glover Teixeira. He didn't have to fake it to get that title shot. And, you know, if John Jones doesn't retire from the 205 division, maybe this never happens. I don't know. But the way things worked out, it's a great story. And I hope people don't try to twist this into a negative thing. You know, it's like, oh, an old guy won it. Is he going to win 10 fights like John Jones? I don't care. If he loses his next fight to Jiří, if he loses his next fight to whoever, I don't care. Glover Teixeira came back from a dominant title loss to John Jones a few years back, came back and won the damn belt. Freaking awesome. What a story. What a story. I love it. Glover Teixeira rules. And every MMA fan should be happy.
Yeah. I meant to say was he was almost colted by Carl Roberson. He didn't get colted because he came back and won that fight. But he was in big, huge trouble in that fight. But, I mean, to go from there to where he's at right now still, just absolutely incredible. Apologies for the mess up there. You know, it's just an incredible story.
It's an incredible story. And I think maybe it was Nolan King or another reporter, you know, suggested, is Glover Teixeira kind of the greatest unlikely 205 champion or one of the greatest UFC, most unlikely champions in UFC history? Actually, I think it's Jan. I think Jan was still even a more unlikely champion because Glover was always an elite 205er. Jan was kind of on the brink of getting cut, I think, multiple times. So regardless, there's no use really ranking who's the most unlikely champion. Glover did it. He did it dominantly. I picked Glover to win because clearly I know what I'm talking about. And it was just super, man. It's like it just looks like a good dude, and it's gonna be a big shock when we go to next week, because next week's main event is not gonna be, as far as the build up, would not have the same energy in that this week had.
Yes, I don't think Kamaru Usman will be handing Colby Covington a beer to put in his fridge for after the fight at UFC 268, but that's a conversation for another time. It's probably going to be an ugly build to MSG, if we're being honest, but they're selling pay-per-views, and that's what sells pay-per-views. But AK, I want to go back to you because here's what I continued to see on Twitter after the moment. Let's praise Glover Teixeira for getting to the top of the mountain, but what he should do is he should take that title on the top of the mountain and just leave it there and crawl back down, because I don't want to see him fight Jiří Prochazka. I don't want to see him fight some of these young bucks. I've seen this time and time again since Glover won the title. Just retire. Don't fight Jiří. Jiří will crush you and you won't be the champion anymore. I think he's got a shot against Jiří. Like, Jiří is a dangerous, scary dude. But Glover is a seasoned veteran. He did the damn thing tonight against Jan Błachowicz. Do you, like, were you on the side that I'm on, where it's just like, dude, let the fight play out? Or are you kind of hoping that Glover won the title, rode off into the sunset as a world champion, something that a lot of people didn't think he would do in his career?
I mean, as a fan, selfishly, I want to see him continue fighting. I mean, there's also that part of me that's, he's been fighting for a long time. He's taken a lot of damage. I want to see him retire with all his faculties intact and to be able to play with his children and all that. But as a fight fan part, I want to see him keep fighting. And I agree with what you're saying about the Prochazka thing. Like, what should he, like, not want to go out that way? First of all, he's the kind of guy, he'll want to go out on his shield. You know, it's cool to go out in a high. I'm sure if tomorrow he changes his mind and decides, you know what, I don't want to fight again, I'm sure he'll be very fine with that decision. But at the same time, I'm sure the current thinking he has now, where he's like, no, I want to fight. I want to defend this title. I'm the champion now. I'm sure that high, he won't regret it. He won't regret it later, no matter what happens in the next fight. And the thing with Jiří is, of course, I bet Jiří, boy, I bet he'll be probably, by the time fight night rolls around, like maybe a 3-1 favorite, maybe -250 at worst. But if you thought, I'm sure a lot of people would have thought that Błachowicz would have been a good challenge for him. I don't think anyone would assume he would have killed Jan, right? They might have picked him to beat Jan, but I don't think they would have thought it was a blowout. So if you think that, I don't know, matchups matter, but if you think that Jan would have had a chance, well, Glover just beat him. So why can't Glover have a chance to beat Jiří Prochazka? So I'm very much looking forward to that fight. I'm sure Glover is too. And again, whatever happens, you know, you can't take away Glover winning the title. You're not taking away Matt Serra winning the title. You're not taking away Forrest Griffin winning the title. Doesn't matter what happened next. These are great moments in MMA, and they're not soiled by what happens after.
Casey, did you see when Glover Teixeira was, it was brought up about Jiří Prochazka, they showed Jiří in the crowd, And Goldberg finally found him. He goes, where is he at? Come down here. And he sees him and he's like, oh, yes, you and me, we're going to fight. And Yuri Prohaska's like, yeah, let's do it. And he goes, yes, in May. We'll fight in May. And the drop on his face is like, oh, no. May? I got to wait 7 months to fight this guy? I thought that was brilliant gamesmanship by Glover Teixeira. Yes, I know you want to take some time off, but I think he had this planned. I think that was a 42-year-old move, being like, this guy wants to fight. He wants to fight as soon as possible. I'm going to make him wait over a half a year before he has to fight me again. Now he has a decision to make. Do I want to wait another 7 months to fight for a world title? Or do I want to risk it all and fight Jan or fight Ankalaev or fight Rakic or fight somebody like that? So I thought brilliant strategy on Glover's part. Just beautiful. What did you think of the whole thing?
When I heard the word May, I was bummed. I was like, oh, no, because this is what it's already been about. It's already been over. I think it's been 6 months or so since Yuri fought, right? It feels like it's been
May, right?
May.
Was it May or March?
Yeah, I'll call that 6 months. Fight. Yeah, it's been a while. So it's going to be over. It could be up to like 9, 10 months before Yuri fights again, between his last fight and now. I hope the fight happens. I want it to be sooner. I hope the UFC can push some more money toward Glover Teixeira and make that fight sooner. I'm hoping sometime, you know, February, you know, maybe the Super Bowl weekend. That would be cool. If Yuri wants to fight again, that's risky. It's really just a financial decision for him, I would think. I hope it's sooner. I don't want to wait till May. That would suck because just a lot of things can happen. And Glover's going to be older. I mean, he'll be older. It's just like he'll
be 42 and a half.
42 and a half. I mean, yeah. I don't. Now that Glover's winning all his fights, everything he says seems like a genius move, I guess. Those things. When you're losing fights, it's just like, oh, you're just talking. Now that he wins, it's like, oh, that was a good move. That was smart.
I think that was planned. I think it was planned a little bit. I think part of it's true anyways, but just the way he presented it in Yuri's face, it was just so picture perfect.
How many
so
times well have we heard done. Fighters kind of say, oh, I'll fight in 6 months, but the UFC's like, we want you to fight, you know, 2 weeks from now. Well, maybe not champions, but, you know, they want to fight a little sooner. And I don't know if Glover has the pull of the UFC to kind of stretch it out that long, but hopefully we see him sooner. That's all.
We'll see what happens. Great win. Jan Blachowicz, of course, AK. Champions mentality, went to the press conference, answered all the questions. Could tell he didn't really want to be there, but he still went there. He faced the music. It doesn't get much better than that. Where does he go from here? Because I think we're both in agreement. The immediate rematch thing is just not going to happen. Even after beating Israel Adesanya, it's just not going to happen. Yuri's next. Go back to the drawing board. You know, what do we do? And what did you make of Jan? His performance, did he seem a little off? I know that was a big narrative heading out, but just the way he's handled it all in defeat.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was a little off, but I don't know if he's going to pin it on anything specific. We always talk about how fighters have one of the most difficult jobs because they fight 3 or 4 times a year max. If it's not your day, it's not your day. And if it's not your day in a big title fight, it's not your day. This isn't like other pro sports, like baseball. You play 162 times a year. You could have 4 bad games in a row and you're like, oh, well, guess what? I have 20 games coming up in the next month. I'll be fine. I can sort it out. MMA, you don't get that chance. If you're even off a little bit, and this isn't taking away from anything that Glover did. You know, it's, again, every title fight in history, I'm sure the loser could say, I wasn't at my best. So the winner can't control that. It's a fine quality win for Glover Teixeira. He beat the best light heavyweight in the world. I don't know if anything was off with Jan, or because like you said, he just didn't feel like himself. And who knows what it was. It could be time zone. He's, you know, just I got the style of opponent. It could be something he ate this morning. It could have been something wrong with the weight cut. You don't know. And it could be all those things combined. And he'll probably never know exactly what it was. You know, there's probably isolate a few things. He'll never know. Why did I fight so poorly? Why did I go down in the second round? Why did I tap? Why was the choke getting so quick that I had to tap within seconds of it being put in? There's just no way to know. But As for what's next for him, kind of to follow up on what you guys just said, if I'm him, I'm trying to get in soon. He does sound like he wants to take some time off, and he deserves it. I understand that. Again, he's an older fighter too. But if he wants to really undercut Jiří, if this May thing is true, get back in there. He should fight a Rakic or fight an Ankalaev. He gets a big finish or impressive win against one of those guys. Then he calls for the rematch. Then if you're Jiří, you're really sweating. Then you're like, oh, crap. Like, I have to fight. That's why I was going to say when you guys were asking what should Jiří do next, he also should fight. It sucks. He was an alternate for this fight. That should earn him an automatic title shot. But if he can't wait until next May, and he probably shouldn't, I don't think the division is going to stop moving. So someone could easily take his spot. And then if someone gets injured, gosh, it delays it even further. So, yeah, everyone's got to stay busy. That's pretty much my take on it. There's no waiting until next May if that's what Glover is planning to do.
205 is interesting. It's as interesting as it's been in a long time. It is. It's compared to the other divisions, it's not that interesting, but it's still very, it's interesting as it's been in a long time. Casey's rolling his eyes, but you know what I mean.
I know.
Like,
I know
205 has not been interesting in a long, long time.
And now it is. And I think it is now. I'm big into belts changing. People complain when there's a dominant champion. People complain when there's not, like when the championship rotates all the time. They kind of complain all the time about it. I like the 205 division now. I think it's got old guys and young guys. That's why, like, you know, you got the up and comers, you know, the Prohaskas, the Rakicis, and you have the oldest dudes with Glover Teixeira at the top. That's awesome. It's a great story. But what is this thing about Jan looking bad? To me, maybe I'm Mr. Positive today. I thought maybe because I thought Glover was going to win, and I was kind of pretty confident in that. Maybe I thought Glover just looked like himself, and I thought he was always the better fighter than Jan. Do you really think Jan was just had like an off night and, you know, he wins that fight 9 out of 10 times type of thing? Or is it just,
no,
you know,
I wouldn't say that at all. I just say he didn't look good. He didn't look good. And again, that's probably because of Glover.
The person
that's
across the cage.
Glover's,
yeah.
Yeah. That's to Glover's credit. Not because Jan couldn't perform. He didn't look good tonight. But again, like I said, you can make excuses for any fight, and that's not what I'm doing here for Jan Blachowicz, and I don't think he wants to either. He just says he wasn't himself. He didn't say why. He didn't say, oh, I would have beaten Glover on any other day. He didn't say anything like that at the post fight press conference. Because again, we don't. All that matters is they fought tonight. Glover won, and if they never fight again, that's how it's always going to be.
The takedown was huge. Takedown was absolutely massive
in the first round. Mm-hmm. And the first round takedown,
the grueling, grimy, the can openers and the shoving the forehead.
Yeah, we had that head. Yeah, he pulled the head open.
Like, that was, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, I know what I kind of poo poo sometimes the commentary for the UFC, but I thought tonight, I thought Felder and DC and Anik did just a great job the whole night with
Seeing
something.
Tonight,
there wasn't one moment tonight where I was going, oh boy. I thought tonight they nailed it, and I thought maybe it was DC that said when he got that takedown, he was just like, that is big. That is a big deal when he got that takedown within the first, whatever, 30 seconds of the fight or something like that. And I thought those guys did a great job tonight with all those fights, so I want to applaud that.
Yeah, great job by the commentary team. I think DC might have had a little extra juice with some of the Khabib associations.
Oh, yeah, well.
So, Khabib's buddies and teammates. So he was a little more invested for like half the fights on the card.
Yeah.
Some people don't like that. Some people are like, "What? Like, should he even be commenting on these fights when he's like, he is trained with a lot of these guys? He's friends with a lot of these guys." I didn't mind it tonight. I'm not saying it's not an issue. Certainly I could see why people wouldn't want a commentator to have that potential bias. But I think, as you said, Casey, tonight, commentary was just really good.
Yeah, good analysis. Fifth, good. Yeah.
14 fight card, long fight card. The energy was great. The analysis was great. So well done, Cormier, Felder, and excellence. Oh, and of course, what's his name? I'm sorry, Jim.
Dean Thomas.
No, I'm sorry. He was doing the sideline reporting today. Our British Jim. What's his
John.
Name?
John
Gooden. John Gooden. I'm sorry. His name is Gay. John Gooden was excellent as well today.
Nailed it.
We missed him so. We missed him so much. I forgot his name. That's
by the way. Just real quick before we move on from the commentary. You mentioned DC. He was a little animated for his guys. Did you know that Paul Felder had a teammate on this card? Did you even realize it? Andre Petrosky.
Oh.
And you didn't know it, did you? Because Paul Felder does such a great job of ignoring it. Like, you had no idea. If I didn't tell you, you wouldn't even have known. Just the way he called it. Such a difference when Felder calls his teammates fights and when DC calls his teammates fights. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, if one of my teammates fought and I'm on color commentary, I don't know how I would be. I'd probably favor him a little bit more. I'm with DC in a lot of ways, but Felder just does such a great job of keeping that out.
If I was doing commentary on Casey's fight, upcoming fight, I'd be shouting like I'd be the Rip his D off guy. You know, rip his D, rip off his D. Casey, why aren't you ripping off his D more?
Twist
it. So I like I said, I applaud them because I would not be able to contain myself.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Because we're not gonna really talk about it. Can we talk about what was the guy's name? Petrovsky? How do you say his name?
Jay Petrovsky. Yeah.
Petrovsky's opponent.
Hu Yaozong.
3-3. I saw your tweet. Can you kind of break down his UFC notoriety now?
I should credit this person on Twitter. So I'm sorry. There's a Twitter user who I'll credit in a second who reminded me. So one of two fighters. I was asking if he was the first, but it's one of two fighters to start off 0-3 in the UFC at three different weight classes. He started as a heavyweight, then fought at light heavyweight, and then that was like 3 years ago and came back completely changed to the middleweight and lost again. So 0-3. The other, Jerome Rivera, who fought at bantamweight, then flyweight, then featherweight. So that was a weird one. So he started off 0-3 and actually went 0-4 before being released. So kind of a weird historical footnote. And but at least Jerome Rivera had a better record before joining the UFC. Hu Yaozong, after that loss, is now 3-3 as a professional.
And I picked him to win this fight too. He's like, I was like, I don't know, whatever. Man, like looking at the three guys he beat to get into the UFC, 0-1 debut and 2-3. Why was this guy in the UFC? Well, I know why, but
I think he was a product of the Shanghai Performance Center. So they must be thinking, they must have thought that there was really, you know, let's something. But I mean, they gave him some really, Petrovsky's a super tough opponent. If you're trying to build a guy up, I don't know why you'd put him with Andre Petrovsky. That was a very strange choice.
Okay.
I don't know, man.
Yes. There you go. And Jerome Rivera at least got a win on the contender series. So justified. All right, so that was the main event. AK, we got ourselves a classic. I always call the bantamweight division the intercontinental the bantamweight title, the intercontinental title. Interim intercontinental title was on the line, and this fight delivered. Piotr Jan versus Corey Sandhagen. In the end, 49-46, all three judges scored it for Piotr Jan. I also scored it 49-46, but again, and I tweeted this out, the scorecards are not indicative of how close this fight actually was, because if you look at the actual stats, some of the rounds favor Corey Sandhagen, but it just depends on how you score rounds. Damage is always the number one priority. That's something we've all had to sort of learn and live with. That's kind of the universal judging at this point. Damage trumps all, and I felt that Piotr Jan landed the more damaging strikes in rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5, and Sandhagen won the first. That's how I scored it. How did you score it? And just your thoughts on such a tremendous, tremendous matchup for the interim bantamweight title.
Yes, first, shout-outs to @WrestleJamia on Twitter for the Jerome Rivera tidbit. But that was one of the best fights of the year, indisputably. Again, I'll have to look back at – in my mind, I'm thinking it's the best fight of the year just because I just watched it. It was – we thought it was going to be a spectacular striking battle. It was exactly that. Corey Sandhagen winning the first round only made it more intriguing. I think a lot of us knew that Jan has dropped, the opening round, like one of the opening rounds before. Jose Aldo, there was definitely moments in that fight early on when Aldo was winning. But Jan has that gift of, boy, once he gets those lasers locked in, you can see his gear is just change. And man, by the third or fourth round, he was countering everything, every unorthodox movement that Corey Sandhagen tried to make, he would run into a Jan strike. It was unbelievable. Like, it's just you'd have to, I think you'd really have to slow it down to appreciate it. But even in real time, I think everyone watching was having so much fun. And that's what made it a great fight. I had it 49-46 for Jan, but the second round, very close. And even the third round, I would give it comfortable to Jan, but it wasn't like he blew Sandhagen away in the third round. It was competitive. So yeah, definitely people are going to look at the 49-46 and say, oh, why didn't the judges, you know, give one more round to Corey? But 3 and 4 were the real runaway rounds for Jan. And then 2 was close, 1 Sandhagen won. So it was a good competitive fight. The scores don't, you know, the judges were great. The judges did it. I think they scored it perfectly. And I don't think they should be criticized for. We're loving everybody tonight. Commentary team, judges, every referee on the card. I mean, I don't think we're going to mention any referees in the card who did a bad job. So just top to bottom, good stuff. But yeah, one of the best fights of the year. And we'll talk about it more in the rankings later this week. But boy, if there was any question from Jamokes like me that Piotr Jan was the number one bantamweight in the world, pretty sure he's the number one bantamweight in the world.
Yes. Your thoughts, Casey? I mean, catch as catch can, kind of a 135 pound fight. This is everything we hoped it would be and more, for being honest. Jan gets it done. Seems like we're going to get Sterling Jan 2 for the undisputed title. Just a great fight. Your thoughts overall?
I think we're all kind of in agreement. It's just a super good fight. Just A-level fighters fighting at their best. That's all. And to me, the best weight division in all mixed martial arts. I was super excited about this fight. I was super excited when it was booked. And the fight absolutely delivered. Ooh, I got to ban someone on the comment. You are banned. Oh, my goodness. You are gone, sir.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. yeah, it was just a great fight, man. Piotr Jan exceeded my expectations tonight. I know he doesn't fight like Anderson Silva, but he has that thing where he will kind of almost give a round away because he is studying and breaking you down, and he gets stronger. And he doesn't get stronger throughout the fight. He figures you out. And all your tricks and little moves and strategies you had planned through training camp, by, you know, 8 minutes into the fight, he's like, all right, I know what you're doing. And then he takes over. And It's just an exciting fighter. And he's so tough, covers up so well defensively. He just incredibly defensively, and yeah. And when he throws, he hits hard and he wants to hurt you. And everything Sandhagen gave him, he ate it and then gave it back harder. And yeah, it was just great fight. I get so excited when you have a fight you really want to see between the best fighters in the world and actually lives up to the expectations. As great as Glover winning, I wish it was a more competitive fight, just because, you know, you want to see that. So, but we got that in this fight, in the bantamweight fight, so it was super duper. But I would like to talk about the score a bit. I'm going to be a bit of a rogue journalist, and if this was in Pride, no doubt Piotr Jan was a better fighter. But if we go round by round, which I hate doing, I think that's stupid, I actually scored it for Corey Sandhagen, and and if we go by statistics, which I will bring up here, where's my little thing? I don't know how well you can guys read that. I did score round 1, 3, and 5. Was it round 3?
Maybe 2. Not 3. 3 and 4. 3 and 4 were the most offensive.
Oh, 3 and 4 was Yeah. I did. I think it was 2 and 5. Round 1s, 2 and 5. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think those could have gone to Corey with the different judges. Statistically, he landed more significant strikes, more total strikes in both those rounds. So if it wouldn't have gone to Corey, I wasn't going to be shocked. I just think it's interesting. Even the commentators did point out when that head kick landed in the fifth round, to me, I thought that was the crowd really helped push Jan. It made that kick look a lot harder because that kick was off foot. That's why when it landed, it made the big slap sound, and that's why Corey was all like, that was nothing. I was just at the top of the foot. That's for a high-level fighter, that's nothing. But it did make a lot of noise. The crowd reacted as if it was like a giant head kick, and I get it. That's just, you know, that's, and judges react on that. But I do think Jan was the better fighter, and I have no issue with the decision because I respect the Pride scoring system with judges the whole fight, and Jan was the better. He did the more damage as a whole. His rounds he won were bigger and more dominant.
But even without the pride scoring system, I think in the rounds where Corey landed more, Jan was still landing the heavier shots.
I understand. I understand.
Yeah. And that's the first criteria. So significant stats can be very deceptive because significant stats are not all created equal, right? Like someone could land two haymakers like that just rock their opponent in a round. And let's say the other guy lands like 10 like pitter-patter leg kicks. It's going to look like two significant strikes versus 10 significant strikes in a fight.
If you and part of fighting, and this is what Peter Jan's really good at, is it. Oh, sorry. When part of, you went out for a bit. Part of fighting, which Peter Jan is good at, when he does get hit, he doesn't show it. He doesn't like he get hit hard. Yes. He doesn't back up or go like, whoa, oh my, let me restart. He gets hit hard and just kind of walks right through it. So for the judges, it might be an incredibly damaging strike, but they will never know that. And that's one thing that makes Peter Jan a championship, just a future all time great bantamweight. It's because when he gets hit, those big shots hit him, he just walks right through them like it was nothing. So yeah. Way to work the judges, which is part of the game. I'm saying work the judges like it's a bad thing, but that is part of the game is you get hit hard. It doesn't hurt. You just play it off. And I think even the commentators mentioned that. But one unfortunate things for Corey is that since he's so light skinned, everything that touches him kind of shows up welts and everything. So it's just unfortunate. It's a bad look for fighters. But that's you fight with the hand you're dealt with.
By the way, Casey, someone is saying you jinxed my boy. Didn't you pick Glover on the? Wait, I know you changed. I know you picked Glover.
I picked Glover
with us. You picked Glover, and on the preview show, right?
Yeah, I picked Glover,
and on the pre-fight. Okay, you did pick Glover.
I've been picking Glover all week. Yeah, I've been picking Glover and Corey all week. Yeah,
you did the whole. I've picked against Jan every time, and finally, it came through.
I broke the curse. That's right.
And just think, we have to look forward to at 135 right now. We got Rob Font, Jose Aldo coming up December 4th. That's a big one, especially if Rob Font wins. We got Jan Sterling, too, which I'm hoping happens like in February. I think that if you're going to do Adesanya Whitaker 2, Sterling Jan 2 on that card would be a tremendous co-main event. Then we got TJ Dillashaw, who will face the winner of that. And then, I mean, it's just the types of matchups that are in store for us. It's just unbelievable. And there's still so many. Like, we got guys like Marab. We got so many 35ers, like 1 through 30, that are all really good, that are climbing the ranks. It's just very exciting time to be a fan of the Intercontinental Bantamweight division, the most fun division in the sport right now. I'm not saying it's, like, the best, but it's the deepest, no doubt about it.
Worldwide, across all promotions. ONE, Ryzen, Bellator, UFC, obviously. Just so many awesome 135ers. When did this happen? Like, all of a sudden, I swear within the last year and a half, it's like, oh my god, 35 is the division. It just took a little time and it became the thickest division. It's awesome.
So good. So great wins there for both those gentlemen. Islam Makhachev, great win. He is on to something big. If you throw him into a title fight, I'm not going to complain. I don't think he's going to get a title fight. People are giving me crap about it, saying, how dare you dismiss Islam Makhachev and just say he's definitely not going to get a title shot. Crazy things are going to happen for Islam to get into a title fight. There's going to have to be an injury, and like everything's going to have to fall into place perfectly for Islam to fall into a title shot for his next fight. There are a lot of options for him. He just needs one win inside the top five, and he's in. One win. You beat Beneil Dariush, you beat Gaethje, or you beat Chandler, or you beat the loser Poirier Oliveira. You beat any one of those guys, and it's a guarantee. No one's going to question it. You have done everything possible to get a title shot. And he could very well be the best 155-pounder in the world. If you told me that, I'm not going to argue with you. But AK, just looking at that performance, Dan Hooker, who just fought not long ago, is a gamer, was the biggest underdog on the card. I think he was ranked number 6 or 7 heading into this fight. After that performance, does Islam just jump everybody else? Like, would you just throw him into a title fight at this point, no matter what happens in these big 55 fights coming up? Like, has he earned that, or does he need one win? Does he need one top five win? Because he does not have that right now.
Ideally, he should. But like, I think, again, I've been saying it all week that I think this, and he said, again, I'm probably just playing off of what Islam said, but he's right. If Chandler wins and Oliveira wins, I don't think they run that rematch back right away. I don't think that they make him fight Gaethje or Dariush. If not only because I don't think he needs to, but also same management, right? I think the management of those guys would rather that to keep them all alive rather than have, because if Dariush just doesn't fight, he's probably still in line for Talishan, or can get a different opponent somewhere down the road that's not as tough as Islam to keep his title fight hopes alive. Gaethje, even if he loses to Chandler, he's such a fan favorite. He's never more than one win away from fighting for the title. People would love to see him fight Charles Oliveira. So again, you don't want him fighting Islam. So that's two guys who I don't think if their shared management is doing the right thing, is going to make them face one another. I know that sucks. I'd love to see all these guys fight each other, but I think we know how the game works. I think unless it is for the title itself, they're going to avoid matching their aces up. So it's just, I just don't think it's going to happen. So ideally, the Chandler wins, Oliveira wins, and I think Makhachev slides right in there. I don't think it's as crazy, and I don't think he needs the perfect circumstances. I just think he needs a couple of the fights to go that way. That said, if Gaethje wins, then I think Makhachev definitely has to fight someone else. Probably not Dariush. They probably keep him apart. But yes, one more win. Gaethje is getting the title shot, obviously, if he beats Chandler.
If I'm Islam, I'm getting on that December card. If there's a spot open, get on there. Call out Dariush. I think Dariush said he wanted to get in before the end of the year after becoming a dad. Fight that fight. Dariush is ranked number 3 in the division right now. Beat him. It's a no-brainer. No matter what happens in that title fight, you're next in line. And honestly, no matter what happens in Gaethje Chandler, like if he goes in there and just starches Dariush and stops him in the first round, you give him the title fight over Gaethje. You just do at that point. There you go. He's got. I would like to see him get a top 5 win, though. I would like to see one top 5 win, and that's a no-brainer. Because if you look at Dariush's resume, I mean, they're pretty close. They beat a lot of the same guys, and the only real outlier between the two is Dariush steamrolled Tony Ferguson, who was ranked higher than Dan Hooker when they fought. And then Islam beat Dan Hooker, who took the fight on short notice. Let me ask you this, Casey. If Islam did this to RDA, would it have more impact?
I think it's the same, honestly. I think the dominant, if Islam would have had a 3-round decision victory over Hooker, maybe the impact isn't the same as having a 3-round decision victory or RDA. But the fact that he just, the way he rolled through Dan Hooker was just, I mean, for Dan Hooker, that just sucks. You've kind of heard his story. Like, you know, he doesn't really know when he's coming back to New Zealand because of the way the quarantine flights work and everything. And he took a big gamble, more of his personal life, you know, and spending time with being with his family. But, you know, this was a big opportunity. And, unfortunately, it failed miserably. And for Dan Hooker, you know, two big pay-per-view opportunities and high-profile fights failed miserably for him. If Islam does this to RDA, I think it's the same, honestly. Is RDA, is he injured, or is he out for a while? I mean, can they still rebook that fight? Does he need to beat RDA to get the title fight? I mean, rather than Dariush?
No, I think he's way beyond RDA.
Yeah, me too. That's why I don't think the RDA Hooker thing really matters, because if you want to say, oh, he beat Hooker, okay, but he still got to beat RDA, but I think we're kind of over that. So I feel, I just feel it's old news now. I forgot RDA was the original opponent because Islam's just complete domination. Like Hooker kind of had, you know, 20 years to prepare for this fight. Well, it would have lasted maybe 10 seconds longer. I don't know.
Of course, Dan Hooker, absolute legend on Twitter, posted a GIF of Woody Harrelson crying and then taking like $100 bills and drying his tears. Like just the way you should handle it. I didn't think it was that risky for him. This is low risk, big reward. He goes in there, his stock rises no matter what. Him just walking into that octagon tonight to fight this guy on short notice was a win in everybody's eyes. Dan Hooker's a legend, win or lose. If he got submitted in 12 seconds, it wouldn't have made any difference in the way people view Dan Hooker. So good stuff from Islam.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be more positive and think that way, but I just don't think that's going to be true a few months from now. I just don't think people will remember the short notice part, the part that you filled in. It's just you lost, you lose the big fights. And I think of that moment when a reporter asked Dan Hooker, like, are you the new Donald Cerrone? He was kind of like, without being rude, he's like, no, I'm Dan Hooker. You know, I'm not, because Donald Cerrone kind of became known as this guy that loses the big fight. And I don't think Hooker is not that guy, but I mean, if he loses again in another big, you know, if he works his way back and loses another big fight, you know, that's a spot he doesn't want to be in. And we love Dan Hooker, but like, I hope I, you know, I don't want him to kind of be this high-level gatekeeper. And unfortunately, he might be, you know, because there has to be one.
It's yeah. tough
can
division.
We look at some of the... Some of the killers he is. So he just fought.
Oh, I know. I know. His resume is insane. Yeah.
Michael Chandler, obviously. Dustin Poirier. Paul Felder, who he beat. Ali Aquinta, who he beat. Edson Barboza, he lost to. Gilbert Burns at lightweight. Jesus, yeah. Murphy. Jim Miller. So that, and then and that's not everyone, but that's like his some of his last like eight opponents. And ever since COVID hit, like, now if anyone says I'm making excuses, I'm 100% making excuses now. I have no idea how Hooker has been doing all this traveling, being in quarantine, dealing with the New Zealand, you know, to the point where the city kickboxing gym is talking about moving out of New Zealand. So they've had restrictions of how they're able to train in their own friggin' gym. The visa issues he had ahead of the Hack Press fight, which he won. Mm-hmm. I bet if he himself, he probably hasn't even thought about it. When he looks back on the last like 18 months or ever since COVID started about like his training routine, I'd be surprised if he had one. He is the Dan Hooker has been facing every fighter faces adversity, but Dan Hooker's definitely faced some unique adversity in the last 18 months. It's just completely crazy.
He took the number one lightweight in the world, according to the rankings that matter in the sport, to the limit in one of the best fights of the year last year in an empty UFC Apex. That fight was ridiculous. Dan Hooker took Dustin Poirier to the absolute limit.
But you know what sucks about that? That was great for us entertainment wise, but Dan Hooker is still a human. He still has a body, and is he that same fighter? Can that same Dan Hooker? Can he take Dustin Poirier to the limit today? Well, not literally today, but, you know, is like, is he still, or like, you know, when we think of like Carlos Condit versus Robbie Lawler, when we see these 25-minute wars, there is a price to pay. And I hope there isn't long-term effects on Dan Hooker, you know, from those insane fights. The Felder fight too. You know, luckily this fight, Islam took it down and it wasn't like, it wasn't what I was fearing. It wasn't, you know, 15 minutes of him just, you know, getting little shots and just, you know, little concussions for 15 minutes. Luckily, he came out of this fight just with, what did he get, choked? What was it, arm? What?
No, he. I was going to say, if it was up to him, he would have had his arm or his shoulder dislocated.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he tapped. I don't think he tapped or verbally tapped. I think the referee saw that he was dead. Yeah, the referee saw he was dead to rights and was like, yes, I could let him continue torquing your arm another few degrees, but why? Why? So yeah. I think Dan Hooker's like was maybe mad in the moment. I don't think he's that. Like I said, I don't think he's that mad. Now.
Was that the whole Dan Hooker being?
He
kind
did
of
seem upset.
I wasn't sure what that was about.
But he wasn't like super upset. I think he also knew like, man, I was screwed.
Oh, he
like,
was. Screwed. He was definitely screwed.
Like, yeah. I think he was kind of like, man, I wish like I'd been able to like you know give him a couple more seconds and like been allowed to tap out or to really submit. But his hand was caught under his other hand was caught under his body, so he could not tap out. Mm-hmm. It would have had to have been a verbal submission, and I don't think he's ever going to say I quit. So that arm was just going to snap. So in addition to all the other
things, for the worst thing.
Oh, it was. They had a camera angle on it. I was just like,
referee was like not in position at all. He was like behind it, couldn't see the other hand. I was like, oh no, please stop this. And then luckily the ref stopped it. I was like, oh,
he's not something.
Yeah. Tapped.
Oh yeah, you know, talking about damage. I forgot, but the Barboza fight. How much damage Hooker has taken to his body? In these fights. So. You know, Mr. Dan Hooker, yeah, wipe with the money, take some time off, go home, rest, and I know it's a fight game, but man, I just want Dan Hooker to fight a couple of gentlemen outside of the top 10, you know, top 15. And
Casey,
I know it doesn't work that way. I want to fight the best.
Don't be a soy boy.
I know.
Don't be a soy boy. I thought now that you were a real MMA fighter, your soy boy tendencies would have been beaten out of you. And yet here you are. Oh, I want the fight.
Oh, head trauma. I care about their lives outside of the cage.
Oh. I want them to be properly paid. Oh, the Zaleski Saint-Denis fight should have been stopped. Oh, no. That referee did a terrible job. Come on, man. Come on. This is MMA, man. God, I'm sorry, Mike. I'm
guilty.
Sorry.
Guilty.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Let's continue on. There's a couple other things I want to talk about before we go to the peeps. I want to run. Oh, I do want to shout out all the winners. Ulan Bekov, split decision. That was a fun fight with Alan Nascimento. Andre Petrosky, nice win. Lerone Murphy, great knockout over Makwan Amirkhani. Mikhail Oleksychuk, beautiful uppercut. Finishes Shamil Gamzatov. That was the first loss of Gamzatov's career. Elizu Zaleski dos Santos, unanimous decision. Ridiculous. I'm not even going to, we'll talk about that. I'm sure we'll get questions about it. Albert Duraev beats Roman Kapilov. Duraev got tested a lot more than a lot of people thought he would. Zubair Tukugov, Ricardo Hamos, good fight. Good win for Tukugov. Amanda Hibas, you almost forgot, beats Verna Jandiroba. That was a great performance. That's Magomed Ankalaev, definitely a title contender. But how about Khamzat Chimaev? How about Khamzat Chimaev? I'll come on these shows once in a while and I'll make these picks and I'll put a foot in my mouth. I put like 2 feet and two elbows in my mouth thinking that Li Jingliang was going to go in there. He's going to weather that storm and he was going to finish Khamzat Chimaev in the third round. And I was so confident in that pick until I saw Khamzat Chimaev body lock Li Jingliang, carry him across the octagon while talking to Dana White at the same time, just so confident, just slams him down, doing whatever he wants. And at that point, I'm just like, wow, I don't think I've ever been more wrong in my entire career, because this was not going to go much better for Li Jingliang. There's no storm to be weathered after that. He completely took him out of that fight mentally. There's nothing you could do once that happens to you. And Khamzat just goes out there 3 minutes later and just puts Li Jingliang to sleep. This dude is the real deal. People don't want to believe it at times, but this guy is the real deal. And if you want to throw him into a title fight right now, go right ahead. I am not going to stop you at this point. This guy, I want to see him fight everybody. I want to see him fight everybody in the top 10 at 70. I want to see him fight everybody in the top 10 at 185 AK. Ooh. I am so excited to see this guy fight. I am more sold on him now than I ever have been, and it's not even close.
Listen, I tweeted this earlier. Usman, once you dispose of Covington, you should be trying to get Chimaev now, because I think Chimaev is not as, you know, not at the, like, I think he's going to get even better. I think you get him now, and I think you have Usman has a very good chance of beating him. A year from now, I don't know. It could be a different story. And again, maybe any version of Usman beats Chimaev. I don't know. But boy, this guy really captures your imagination with his performances and makes you feel like he could beat anybody. Say what people want about the matchups. Like, oh, I want to see him face a wrestler. I want to see him face a better grappler. But the tests he's faced so far, he has passed with the most flamboyant flying colors that you can possibly imagine. He looks like he's unstoppable. Again, if he fights a great wrestler someday, maybe he won't be. I don't know. But right now, the first four fights, how can you not be excited? How can you not think he's a world caliber welterweight? And if I'm Usman, I beat Covington and I say, give me Chimaev now. Everyone's talking about Khamzat Chimaev. Give me him now. Khamzat will jump right on it. And then boom, Usman takes out one of the hottest names at 170 and possibly nips that in the bud before Chimaev becomes, I don't know, the next GSP or something. He's so talented. It's insane.
So to AK's point, because I think you make a lot of sense. Like, if you're going to fight this guy, you fight him now. And I know that Dana was asked about it at the press conference and other people mentioned on Twitter, like, who's going to be excited to fight this guy? If you're going to fight Khamzat, I agree with AK. You got to fight him right now. So, Casey, if you are, let's just throw some names out there. If you're Bilal Muhammad, if you're Michael Chiesa, if you are anybody at 170, if you're Sean Strickland at 185, if you're Wonder Boy, if you're Gilbert Burns, if you're Nate Diaz, are you just, is everybody calling out Khamzat right now? Like, if you're going to get him now. Are we all going after this cash cow at this point? Because you know the UFC is going to push this dude to the moon at this point. Do we just go after him now and just try to take him out? It's like Royal Rumble style. Like, when Kane comes in, all 10 guys in there want to throw him out of there. I feel like that's where Khamzat's at right now. If you're going to try to get him, you try to get him now. Get that payday before he becomes something else, because he's only going to get better.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It reminds me a bit when Floyd Mayweather fought Canelo. And Floyd even said, this is Floyd's whole buildup. Floyd was like, oh, this guy's going to be really good. I'm going to fight him now. And yeah, and he beat Canelo. But Canelo, now that Canelo's at his prime, oh, I think he would whoop up on Floyd in his prime. But that's why Floyd was undefeated. He knew how to pick his fights. And yeah, I think you guys are right. Fight him now. Either fight him now or change your phone number. That's it. just don't answer any calls from McMahon or whoever's the matchmaker. You know, just never. Not gonna fight him. I think Shmaev should. I mean, he's got to be. I mean, what was Lee ranked in our ranking? Like, he was in top 15, right?
He was not top 15, but he did get votes. He did get votes.
Shmaev's dominance in those victories, I think you could justifiably easily put him in the top 10 just because of his domination that he had. Mm-hmm. And if you're anyone in front of him, man, just. Whatever your contracted price for the UFC, ask for a little extra to face that guy. That's all, because he is going to be a big pain in the butt, man. But I didn't even think about Sean Strickland. As far as like quick turnarounds going to 85, that's fun.
And two people who want to commit an actual murder.
Tremendous stuff. It's only 27 years old. Mm-hmm. Geez Louise, the future is very bright.
I was on the fence about him. I believe the hype that the UFC was giving him. I wasn't like, I can't believe they're pushing this guy. You know, when the UFC pushes Greg Hardy, I'm like, this is stupid. I got why they're pushing Shmaev. Like, that made sense. But with, of course, the long layoff, the illnesses, and just him not facing the top guys, I just wasn't 100% sure. I mean, I did pick Lee to win by decision. I thought it was going to be a competitive decision. I love being wrong, and I love that we have a new star. You know, so this is super exciting.
I gotta ask AK real quick because it's on my mind. I just smirked thinking about it. AK, if you're Leon Edwards, what are you thinking right now? Are you worried? Are you concerned that even if you go out there, and you 30-27 Jorge Masvidal, are you feeling good about it? Are you feeling good about it?
Like I said, it depends if Usman does decide to campaign for Hamza. I don't know if he's thinking about that. This is just kind of saying what we would do if we were him. And like we said, like do the Mayweather catch a guy out of his prime thing. Usman might not be thinking about a matchup with Shmaev at all. Could be totally off his right. I doubt that's the case. He's pretty savvy. I think he's very aware that Hamza is coming. He probably is aware of what happened in this fight. So if you're Edwards, I wouldn't be super worried. Even if he wins like a competitive decision against Masvidal, I think at this point he can't be denied, unless Usman gets on the mic himself and tries to manipulate sort of his next challenger is. Then it's all out the door. But otherwise, shouldn't be too worried. But I wanted to make a note about the rankings. We mentioned where does Hamzat go now? You said you would put him top 10 just based on his performances. I think I might too. So going from the bottom of our rankings real quickly, I would put him above, we have three people tied for 15. So I'm going to mention a few names here. I would put him above Jason Jackson in Bellator. Mm-hmm. I'd put him above Rory McDonald. I'd put him above Jeff Neal. I'd put him above PFL champion, Ray Cooper. I'd put him above him. I'd put him above Bilal Muhammad. I'd put him above Douglas Lima, which sounds crazy. But I think I would put him above Douglas Lima.
Style-wise, yeah, I can see that, yeah.
And I'd put him above Michael Page. Then we get to our top 10. There's Neil Magny, Michael Chiesa. And I could see people making an argument that that's the next tier of guys he needs to beat. So I haven't done my, we're going to do our rankings, our next set of rankings this week. I haven't decided yet. But I see on my rankings, he's at least jumping up to like the number 11 spot, which sounds insane, but is very possible.
And the most insane stat, the fact that four fights against professional mixed martial arts ultimate fighters. He's been hit once. How is that possible? I tie my shoes. I go, ooh, I hit myself. That's insane. Yeah. And the hype is real. And he's the whole package. And he's different, too. He's got... He talks trash. He has kind of the broken English. He's just like, I repeat, I smash. He picked up his opponent and like, he didn't go to his corner. No. I'm going over there to the guy that writes my checks. The guy sells fights while he's fighting. Unreal.
I don't know if this is on purpose, but the video guys should make the parallel video the next time they do a hype package. I feel like that was an unspoken homage to Dana White's favorite fight ever. Matt Hughes versus Frank Trigg 2,
yeah,
which
involved
Matt Hughes. I don't know if it was on purpose, but if it was, that's like the craziest thing, because then Dana White definitely was kind of just like I love this guy. Like, I'm going to this guy. If Usman calls for this guy, that fight is happening.
I could see that. Yeah. I could see that.
And if I'm a guy like Daniel Rodriguez right now, who's ready to come back in early 2022, I'm shouting from the rooftops to try to fight this guy too, because you're a surging guy trying to – you just beat Kevin Lee. I mean, go for it. Like, so many fun options.
For someone like Rodriguez – The guys who should be calling out Chimaev are the guys who are expected to get their ass kicked, I think, by him. Even I think Nate Diaz should be calling out Chimaev, because I don't think anyone – I mean, I love Nate Diaz as a, you know, just as a figure in the sport. But, of course, I'm picking Chimaev to kick Nate Diaz's ass. So, and I think Nate Diaz – I think that's just a great fight. I know people are like, well, why would you do that, Nate? But that's why I like Nate Diaz. I think he wants crazy fights like this. He wants to be tested. Yeah, he'll probably get his butt kicked, but – that's what Nate Diaz is about, you know, and if Nate Diaz on his back, you know, let's really see, you know, Chimaev have a serious threat from the person on the bottom, you know. So there's so many good fights. I didn't even think about Daniel Rodriguez, but that's an awesome fight. So man, UFC's got a star. Keep him healthy.
Line him up. You could do the Kevin Holland fight. There's some beef there.
There is? Oh, okay.
Beef there. There's some stories. All right. Let's go to the peeps. We'll take a few questions.
Yep, do it. Do. Oh, old one. That always happens. What'd you think about the Dana White, the whole Fedor thing got brought up again? It's like, geez, again with Dana White and Fedor.
He held back.
You know, but he's not saying the dang – tell me the numbers, Dana. You go, we gave him a contract. Well, tell me the numbers. It's like, what are the numbers you gave him, man?
You watch the fight. There's no doubt in my mind that you watched Fedor's knockout. Like, the question was about, like, the reaction to the knockout.
Yeah.
Originally. Like,
yeah. It was just.
It could have been worse.
Yeah. It could have been worse. Yeah. All right.
Scott McCrate, I think Petr Yan is going to beat everyone he faces for the next 3 years. In a division that is full of killers, he is triple OG.
People love him.
I mean, listen, the guy's real good.
I think of the guys right now, he has the best chance of putting together like a 3-4 fight title defense streak. But I don't know if anyone's sitting at the top of bantamweight for 3 years. That's a long time. A lot of stuff can happen. Chasing other, maybe he gets a wild hair up his butt, decides to go to featherweight. You know, with everyone's doing the two division thing now. So I don't know. I think he can. I think I'll pick him to beat Sterling now. Should that happen, and maybe the next challenger. But after that, we don't know. We got, like Scott even said himself, so many killers coming up again. Mirab Dvalish really maybe is his foil. We don't know, right? It could be a style thing. So I won't go that far. I think at least another year, maybe by the end of 2022, excuse me, he's still the champion.
He didn't really wrestle. I mean, he had a couple of takedowns, but he really didn't wrestle at all, which is kind of surprising. And that just makes the performance even more impressive, because I thought his wrestling down the stretch was going to be the difference, and he didn't even really need it. So, Sheila, good to hear from you. Yeah. Good morning from the Philippines. It's almost 7 a.m. here. It was a challenge, but UFC 267 definitely made it a lot easier to stay awake. I thought about this as well, Sheila. Was this the best card so far in 2021? AK.
I have the memory of a goldfish, so yes. You know why? Because I just watched it and I loved it. No, it probably isn't. It probably isn't, because I mean, it's funny. Of all the decisions, really, there was only one. Maybe the Volkov-Tabura fight was maybe the only one that was like wasn't particularly enjoyable. Otherwise, you know, most of the decisions were pretty good. Were pretty entertaining.
They're all good fights.
I didn't mind the Volkov fight either. I mean, I liked it.
It's a heavyweight fight, so it's definitely intriguing. And again, two elite heavyweights, so that was certainly so. Best card of the year again. Yeah, I mean, because I just watched it. Like again, if our dear Jose was not putting out fires in Abu Dhabi right now, I'm sure he'd have a much more comprehensive list than I would. But yeah, I can't remember a better show. But I also can't remember what I ate for breakfast yesterday. So
14 fights. I never felt the drag. Dumont.
Oh,
like that one felt long. Maybe I don't know. That one just felt long. This one felt like 14 fights, but I wasn't like. Ugh.
What was last Dumont? Week's felt long.
Was it last
week's
week?
Felt long?
Oh, maybe
too.
It was last week.
Except for the main event.
Yeah. Okay. No, it was last week's card that felt. Oh, you're right. I have a memory of a goldfish, a very tired goldfish. But I don't want to rank this as best fight of the card of the year, but it was awesome. And the fact that it was a pay-per-view worthy card. It was a card that was worth $70 and that for most of us in the US of A got for free, or $5 if your subscription or whatever ESPN Plus costs. What a great deal. Tonight was a great deal. It was good to be an American MMA fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there. It's top three to five. It's top three card of the year for sure. I mean, 261 was very memorable. Had some rough moments. I mean, 263 is probably going to be my number one.
Well, just because of everything we're still talking about. The numbers, I forget the numbers already. Who was the main event?
Adesanya Vettori. Okay. Brandon Moreno becoming the champ, flyweight champion. Leon Edwards, Nate Diaz, especially just the last 30 seconds of that fight. Bilal Muhammad, yeah. Paul Craig, Jamal Hill was crazy. Brad Riddell, Drew Dober was a fight that's not being talked about enough for like fight of the year contender. Just some good fights. I mean, it's just, that was a good card. Terrence McKinney had that crazy knockout and then jumped off the cage. We thought he broke his leg. I mean, it's just all sorts of crazy storylines.
Great card on paper and it delivered. That's all. Great card on paper. Yep. A lot of high-ranked fighters, fights that mattered. Not just good fights, but fights that are awesome and they mattered to divisional rankings. And so, cool.
Yes, and it was early in the day. I dig that.
Not for the Philippines, though. Sorry. Good morning. Shout out to the Philippines. Good for you guys who stuck in there and woke up or stayed up to watch that.
Alex K. Lee is great now.
I answered.
Can we all agree that the real Prince of Positivity is Glover Teixeira?
I answered this.
Are you ready to give up that crown, AK?
Oh, I don't have to. I answered it in the comments already. I said, I'm the prince. Glover Teixeira is the king.
Yeah, there you go.
So there you go. That's all I need to do. He's the king of positivity. I bow down to him.
Well played. Louis, are we just completely going to abandon Khamzat's best gimmick of fighting in two weight classes? He's fought twice in each 85 and 70. Let's keep this going. Can you think of a more exciting story? I mean, I'm with it. I'm completely with it. Just fight. If you get it at 85, get it at 70, cool. Imagine like just going up both weight classes and winning two titles. Like not just like, wow, you did so good at 170. Let's just give you a title fight at 185 without like ever fighting in the division. I'm talking about like just running through two divisions, making the climb up both of them.
Yeah.
And winning two titles. Like that would be that would never be done again.
Who has done that? Has the UFC even allowed that? Like a fighter to kind of go up the ranks in two divisions, not just be a champ and then jump over.
I don't think so.
I can't think of one.
At the same time?
Yeah, at the same time. Be a contender in two divisions without being the champ. I think, or even a former champ. Yeah, I think that would be really cool. That would be cool.
We need to see him fight Strickland. Yeah, and so unless Strickland's coming down to 170, I mean, Shimaev's got to go back up, got to go up and get him.
Man, that would be awesome. That would be cool.
Just keep flip flopping.
That would be cool. That's many
things we can do.
Yeah,
and I think that fight would have to go by old by Navy rules, where first one to die loses. And I don't think anyone would object to that.
Just the ultimate murder championships. You know how it goes.
Just that one fight.
Both
guys would. Like, first one to die loses. I think that's more than fair.
We'll hire that ref.
Vyacheslav. I'm sure there's a question there. Vyacheslav Kiselev. My goodness. I don't know if we want to wait until there's a question about her.
Yeah.
That was so awful. We might as well just talk about it.
Can we just talk about that? Yeah, let's just talk about it. Yeah.
What the hell was that guy thinking? His team didn't throw in the towel either. Listen, I know we've talked about this before. Yeah. I know the Calvin Kattar thing gets brought up a lot. Referee didn't stop that one. But although I felt Kattar was in a much better spot than what was the young man's name? Benoit Saint-Denis? Saint-Denis. I mean, this dude. I scored that a 10-7 round.
You did? Okay, good. I thought it was a 10-7 round also.
I scored it a 10-7. Pull up the UFC stats for that round, Casey. I'm curious to see what the stats are for that round. How many strikes that man absorbed. But the referee doesn't stop it. Santini is tough as hell. Good on it. If you want to let it go, and the coach didn't want to let him go out for a third round, great. But, like, he got lit up immediately in the third round. Like, wobbled, almost went down. Right then and then, you're just like, all right, dude, you've had enough. Like, get out of there. You're too tough for your own good. And then, he takes a point away from Alexis Dos Santos for a knee that barely grazes Cup. When I first saw the replay, I'm like, that wasn't even a low knee. He hit him in the belly. And then looking at it again, you saw it like barely grazed the Cup. And the referee, who doesn't stop the fight, he's literally standing there watching Eliza Zaleski Dos Santos hit this dude 175,000 times in a row. Just watching it like, nope, still breathing. Nope, his eyes are still open. No, he's only lost like 2 quarts of blood. We're going to let this thing go. But then he takes a point away. And at that point, I was ready to take my chair and throw it off the balcony. I'm like, are you friggin' kidding me right now? What is going on? What are you thinking, AK, watching this whole thing? Because I know everybody was kind of on the same page here, but I was like, come on, man. Like, what are you doing?
It was uncomfortable, man. It was not – MMA is supposed to be fun, right? That wasn't fun. That wasn't fun to watch. And Saint-Denis is absurdly tough. I call him the French zombie. And I get it. At a glance, you know, he was throwing back. He wasn't falling. I assume Mr. Kisilev was waiting to see if he would actually, as soon as he dropped, maybe he would wave it off. Even then, probably not. I felt like he was still going to give him a chance. But he almost had made up his mind, I'm not going to call standing KO. Which is crazy because this is people are going to say, hey, well, he was fighting back. Saint-Denis was fighting back. And it's like, okay, to our eye, yes, that's it. That's what it is. To the referee, the trained referee whose job it is to oversee the fight and protect the fighters, they have to be able to distinguish between a fighter intelligently fighting back and not intelligently fighting back, which is what the case was here. Saint-Denis is on autopilot. I guarantee you he does not remember enormous chunks of this fight. We've seen Tim Elliott talk about how he's gotten like rocked in the opening round and gone a distance and does not remember the last two rounds. I'm telling you that is almost definitely the case with Saint-Denis. If not, again, he's even tougher than I imagined. So the referees did a terrible job. The commentary team wanted to shout at him. They were shouting and they almost wanted to shout directly at him to tell him to stop the fight. They resisted. It's not their job. I get it. They didn't want to have a Dan Hardy incident. That's fine. I don't blame them at all. It's not their job. It's the referee's job. Then secondarily, it's his corner. I think a lot of people failed Benoit Saint-Denis in this fight. I hope he goes on. He's a very talented guy, as we saw in this fight. I hope he goes on to rack up wins, have great success, take less damage. And this is just a footnote. But I feel like, much like with young Max Roscoff, this is something that's going to – who, by the way, is winning fights for Cage Warriors right now. But this is the kind of incident. It's going to hang over his head for a while. And the only good news is we probably won't see Kisilev referee a UFC event ever again.
94 significant strikes landed by Eliza Zaleski Dos Santos in the second round. 94. And I would say he got rocked. He probably rocked Saint-Denis with like the fifth or sixth. So we're talking like 80 like follow-up big shots after that for the rest of the round. And Saint-Denis, to his credit, was throwing back himself. But like at some point, you just got to step in there. This referee wasn't even like thinking about stopping it. Wasn't even looking at it. Didn't faint it.
It wasn't like, give me something. Wasn't doing that whole thing. Like, I'm going to stop the fight. You see that boxing? I watch a lot of boxing. And man, that would not happen in boxing. You see, first of all, the corners would never allow that in boxing. And MMA just has a different, I don't know, it's just the culture is different. I'm going to go ahead and put an equal amount of blame on his corner. I mean, I know the ref is supposed to do his job. That's part of the corner's job, too. They're supposed to protect their fighter. And their fighter did not have a chance to win that fight. And you have to stop the fight. I don't know. That's just – it's pretty simple. The point deduction thing is another stupid story. That's another – it just adds more to the stupidness and danger of that fight. And there was eye poke, too.
The eye poke. There was the eye poke. I can't see.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. He said he couldn't see. He gave him a way out. He goes, I can't see. And the ref's going – that was – he gave him a way out. Oh.
And he didn't even call the doctor in.
Not calling the doctor to look at it, just said, you can't see, but you can still fight. Okay.
Go ahead. You can't see, but you got two eyes, right? Like, your other eye, jerk.
Ugh.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Never again.
Yeah. And then he took the point after that. I was like, this is just unbelievable.
But going to the point thing real quick, I see a lot of people, media members and fans, and they're very like, they're very hard on like the whole, you know, I kind of joke about this. I kind of joke how, you know, groin shots and eye pokes and fence grabs are completely legal in MMA. I always joke that they're completely legal. The first one's always legal. This ref obviously doesn't obey that rule, but a lot of people think that every eye poke, every groin shot should be automatic point deduction. I don't agree to that. Do you think that that after the first eye poke, do you think Dos Santos, how do you say his name? Zalis?
Zaleski.
Zaleski.
Yeah, Dos Santos. Do you think he should have got a point? Do you think those point deductions were, he should have got a point deduction for the eye poke too?
No.
No, I don't think so either. No, I'm just kind of wondering how you feel about that. The groin shot, to me, it looked like it even hit.
And then he took a point. Yeah, the whole thing was just bizarre. It just seemed like the weirdest time to take a point.
Yeah.
After the vicious beating he doled out in the second round, you let the fight go. And then, thank God for Jason Herzog, in the very next fight, Duraev's going for a takedown. Kapilov holds on to the cage. Herzog doesn't take the point away. He's like, all right, dude, like, I'm going to put you right back in this position. And Duraev just takes him right down and beats his ass for the round. And I mean, just and then they pulled, obviously, this referee from the rest of the car, which they should have, because that dude should never be allowed to referee a UFC fight ever again.
So, and take in mind, that's the UFC's commission, correct? So the UFC doesn't necessarily control the commission, but that's their internal commission. I don't know how that works anymore.
So it's something to that effect, yes.
Yeah. So, but the UFC seemed to pull him out. They can't pull him out during the fight. So the UFC seemed to do the right thing.
Yeah, it's not under like a state commission. It's like an ABC, like kind of whatever ABC like universal role they have. But basically, they commission themselves. In the long and the short of it.
All right.
Well, we got anything else?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Take like two more, maybe.
Yeah.
Joseph Boza, is the UFC happy with Jan beating Corey? Will we get that conclusion Jan and those fans deserve with Sterling versus John too? It's amazing how everyone's just not giving Sterling any chance at all. But yes, I would say yes. The UFC is very happy with Jan beating Corey, not just because of what it sets up with Sterling. I feel like, and maybe you don't agree with this, AK, I feel like if bantamweight, which I keep calling the Intercontinental Division, because I don't feel like there's going to be any like huge breakout stars at 135. I feel like Jan is probably, if it's ever going to happen at this point moving forward, Jan is probably the guy to be that guy that could sort of carry the division and headline events, so forth and so on. So I think the UFC was happy with that for that reason as well.
Yeah, he's not like an A-tier, you know, Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey level star, but there's the thing to be said about consistency, having a persona. I think he's someone who is distinct. I think his style stands out. I think he has a bit of a sense of humor. You know, we've mentioned him kind of horsing around at the workouts. So there's something there. He's not going to be a consistent drawing 600, 700,000 pay-per-view buys every time, but the UFC doesn't need everyone to be like that. It's like you said, they need someone to anchor 12 pay-per-views a year. You know what I mean? So if they have a guy who can be either main or co-main, Jan is that guy. I think he is marketable in his own way for sure. And I think they're happy with no disrespect to Corey Sandhagen. It's just, this makes things a little bit clearer, to setting up the Jan Sterling rematch, which was the plan all along until Sterling had to recover from his neck injury. So, I don't know if they're over the moon with it, but, definitely makes their jobs easier.
Yeah. I think happy is the wrong word. I think, from a promotional standpoint, this is good promotion-y wise, but I think if Sandhagen won, I don't think they would have been like, gosh darn it. You know, it's just that's how I believe the UFC is at the point, you know, where it's just whoever wins, wins. I do believe Dana when he says that kind of stuff. Just before we end this, because we briefly talked about their fight, but
Jono, I hope that EKC isn't too upset after getting beat up by Hibas.
Amanda Ribas looked awesome. Amanda Ribas looked awesome tonight. I thought Verna was going to put some work on her. And Amanda, we talked, me and AK were kind of chatting online about this. But Amanda Ribas, her striking, her just overall presence as a fighter in there was, she looked like she made big improvements from, was her last fight Marina Rodriguez? Was that her last fight? Yeah. She looked like she made big improvements, and she just looked like the better fighter in there. And I was very impressed by Amanda Ribas. And what did you guys think of her performance?
Great. She looked just awesome. It was a y'all must have forgot kind of fight.
Her striking, her striking looked just. I won't say no. She's like, I'm not saying she's, you know, Joanna and like this Muay Thai champion now, but it was very competent, and she looked just controlled in there. She looked like she was comfortable striking. And
she barely got hit. Barely got hit in that fight, especially down the stretch. She barely got touched.
Shout outs to Jandro, one for a good fight. And of course, coming out to Island Boy and making our pal Errol Helwani over the moon with guys, you saw him tweeting about it. He was in our Slack channel. He would not shut up about it. This dude was happy. He was so happy. And Scott McCray asking, what is up with the Island Boys phenomenon? Do you guys actually like the music? It's not just about liking it. It's there. Listen,
the lifestyle.
This probably isn't a politically correct thing to say. But those two guys who made, they're a couple of freaks. Okay. And there's just something bizarre, mesmerizing about the 90-second clip, no beat. There's this cultural appropriation going on. It's a whole thing. It's definitely not like unironic, Scott. It's not like, oh yeah, this is an amazing song. No. We are enjoying this. We are enjoying this somewhat ironically. And for a UFC fighter to come out to that song was just absurd and so funny. And she will end up on the MMA hour wall. I don't call the shots around there, but I can tell you, Errol's a man of his word when it comes to that stuff. You're going to see that picture of Vierna on there a lot.
Oh yeah, they're bringing DC down, and it's going to be Vierna. DC, you're done.
That would be so funny if he took someone down and it was Cormier.
Takes out DC.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
To make room. That would be the coldest that would be thing ever.
Yeah, super excited about Amanda Ribas' improvements. She looked awesome. She looked really good. I was super impressed.
Yeah.
Shout outs. I don't know if we're doing any more questions, but shout outs to Joe Martinez too. I know we had a question way back. Shout outs to Joe Martinez. Did a great job. Someone was asking why do we, some of us in the media, say we think he's better than Bruce Buffer. Not everybody. I'm of that camp. I know Damon Martin is. I don't want to speak for you guys. It's not to say anything bad about Buffer. I think Joe Martinez does a great job with. For me, keeping the emphasis on the fighters, great pronunciation. I think he's better on average at pronouncing names than Bruce Buffer. Bruce Buffer, his energy, look, amazing. Very difficult to match. He definitely gives things a big fight feel. We're very used to Bruce Buffer. So I don't blame anyone who loves Bruce Buffer. Like Bruce Buffer's there for a reason. He creates that epic feel to a fight. But I am more of a Joe Martinez guy. I like someone who's a little less distracting. To put it nicely, but I mean, both guys are great. But I thought Joe Martinez superb throughout the night, and glad he got that job. And hope Bruce Buffer's feeling well, and you guys will see him at Madison Square Garden next week.
There you go, good stuff. Well said. There's the music. I was just waiting for it.
Yeah.
Get some sleep, everybody. I mean, actually, you don't even have to. I mean, if you're on the West Coast,
I'm gonna watch some baseball now. Watch some baseball.
Maybe watch some baseball. Go out to dinner. Go see a movie.
Read a book.
Read a book. Read a book. Hang out with the fam. Do whatever you gotta do. Walk the dog. You got plenty of time for that. But AK and I back tomorrow morning. On to the next one. We matchmake. It's gonna be a loaded show because we're matchmaking for a lot of people. And then we're on to UFC 268 next week. Jose is going to the airport now to fly from Abu Dhabi to New York to cover UFC 268. So that dude is a madman. Thank you, Jose. And thank all of you for watching right now. For Casey, for AK, I am Mike Heck. UFC 267 in the books. Oh, by the way, AK, I don't even think I've told you this. VTL tournament kicks off next week. You're in the first matchup.
What?
Against Damon Martin.
Oh no. Scares me.
Stay tuned. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.